What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Clocks Running, the podcast for everything flag football officials. I'm your host, Ant, and I got a great show planned for today. We're going to talk. We got officials from all over the country. I was hoping to bring Lance in because, as y'all know, USA Flag has Flag Fest in San Antonio this weekend, but he might still be traveling. You know how those Frontier and Spirit delays, hold people up. But, this show is all going to be about the do's and don'ts of being an official. And so we're going to get right into it. Let me bring on the guest. It's been a minute, but first and foremost, I want to bring Tasha on. What up, Tash?
What up?
How's that Florida weather right now? What's it looking like?
It's good. We haven't had rain in a while, so I mean, it's not too hot. It's getting there, but
yeah. Okay, so you're not dealing with that 110 weather they got in San Antonio this weekend at all?
Absolutely not. And if we were dealing with that here, I'd stay inside.
Thanks. So, all right. Next up, we got it's that petty hour, so we got Petty Pat. What up, Pat?
What it do?
And I know you're coming from Virginia Beach for the weekend, going to enjoy yourself with some family, and I appreciate you coming on for this. So let me ask you, Pat, what's the worst condition playing or officiating that you've had to deal with at a flag football tournament?
You say it's worst. Repeat that. Well, say that one more time.
Yeah, worst conditions you've had to deal with, whether it's playing or officiating at a flag football tournament.
I would say it came to a tie now because it can be bad. Like when your whole body cramp up, I'd rather be able to go sit down, because officiating, it ain't no sitting down because you're losing money. When the conditions, if you're not hydrated and you want to party the night before, it's a little different. But as a player, I can be on that field for those little 24 minutes. Or whatever, or less, because depending on the size of the ball you play on. But yeah, conditions as a player, I'll take them as a player compared to the official, because the official has a clock. He has to be out there all day. He has to be out there all day.
Yeah, that's fact. So was the East Coast Nationals? Was that something you weren't used to, or that's kind of how it is every year over there?
I mean, I'm a Florida boy, so rain don't bother me. We practice in rain, and that was drizzle. That was actually, I would take that. Honestly, over 117 degrees. So, So, and we've seen 117 degrees, 2 years ago in Vegas, when you had to change your shoes because your shoes was melting and phones couldn't record or nobody could go live because they were overheating. Yeah. So, those elements, yeah.
Yeah, and honestly, that's no exaggeration. I mean, I was out there still playing, but 117 sounds about right. I feel like there was no relief. That was a 3-day tournament, and man, I feel like those cleats just completely melted to my socks. I mean, it was definitely something else. So, Tasha, you got an experience that you can think of that was just the worst of the worst with weather conditions?
I'd have to go with officiating in like rain or anything like that. Like, even though I was raised in Florida, I don't like outdoor elements, especially like he said, because you don't have time to sit down and you're on the clock getting paid. So if you want to stay in the rain and get paid, that's on you. But like, you don't really have a choice but to do that kind of thing. As a player, you have the option to go in your car, leave or whatever. But I've definitely had a few share of my tournaments where I'm in the cold with the rain. And that's not fun at all, because it's just honestly miserable. You can only cover up so much. And then depending if you're on turf or on grass, when things start to puddle up, there's no avoiding getting those socks wet. And we all know when you have socks that are wet in shoes, blister season comes upon you, and it's just not good.
That's fact. So I'm going to educate both y'all, because I know, or maybe you guys have had this condition, but in Colorado, we would end our 8-man season in the fall, and the playoffs would always be in a snowstorm. And then in the spring, we would have our first week or two in snow. And I will tell you that I mean, there's a fun aspect of it as a player because you got snow on the ground that's not frozen. You can dive a little bit more and you can, you know, try to be a little bit, you know, give your body up a little bit more. But there was one tournament that I put on and we looked at the weather. It looked like it was going to be a perfect day. It was the middle of December. And I walk up to the field that morning to, you know, put all the cones out. And it had gotten this just sheet of ice and snow. And so everybody just brought their shovels. And we chiseled out the smallest flag football field ever, and we did a 3-on-3 tournament, and it was crazy. But I think everybody had a good time, so we still accomplished what we wanted to that day. But yeah, I just want to check on conditions. The last 2 years, I've been out in Texas for Memorial Day weekend, and it gets pretty hot out there. I just think about walking out from the air conditioning, and you walk into like a sheet of humidity and heat, and so. I'm sure that's what Lance is going to be dealing with this weekend, and hopefully he gets some relief. But let's get right into it. The first thing I want to bring up, last week we were talking about player equipment icks and just the things that drive us crazy with players that we were talking about, pockets and hoodies, and we were talking about the crazy goggles that have no purpose and things like that. But since we're talking about do's and don'ts of officials, I want to talk about the official uniform ick. So, Pat, what drives you crazy when you walk onto a field and you see an official dressed in what? What drives you crazy?
What pisses me off? I ain't going to say what drives me crazy. What pisses me off when I see a referee with some sweatpants that's black and the flag is inside out, the knot is inside their pants and it's hanging out like it's like you had a kid's party. And then as far as they whistle, is like they don't even have a real whistle and they don't have no hat. And I'm sitting here like, dude, like, I mean, you knew what you was coming out to do. And then I'm looking at the person. Of course, I'm going to call it, yo, what the hell did you send me? Like, I mean, I could have went to Foot Locker and got one of these. I mean, at least they have the right uniform. I mean, they got on black slacks, black and white same shirt that he wearing and black shoes. I mean, they're not wearing no green shoes. And come on, man. Like, yo, like bro, like, I ain't gonna lie. That irritates the hell out of me.
Yeah. How about you, Todd?
One thing, because you name a lot of stuff, but one thing is a pet peeve of mine, because as soon as you see it, you already know what time they're on. And it's coming to the field to a ref in slides. You already know they're not about to run. They're not about to hustle. And so that's one, like, that's probably my biggest pet peeve is seeing an official and they got on slides.
Yeah, no, I definitely. You know that you can't put them in the back because they're going to get beat every single time. But they probably aren't ready for that line of scrimmage either. So I just got to bring up, Tosh, the experience that we had in Orlando. And you and me were on the field. We were, we were hustling all day. We had fours, we had aired out, and we were getting close into the playoffs, close to the championship. And I just remember an official coming over, and I don't know what snack he had in his hand, whether it was popcorn or something, but he was apparently he was wanting to eat while we officiated. I just remember you immediately at halftime, like, going straight over to Jacob and being like, nope, this has got to go. like, we're good.
I don't even think I went over to him. Game. I was like, you gotta go. Either you gonna eat or you gonna ref one of the other shoes. I think he chose to leave.
Yeah.
I mean, we had been, for a little background context, we had been on the field, Ant and I, running a 2-man field all day, and other fields had had 3 or 4 officials each. And then we just happened to, playoff time, we were on the field, and they had 2 refs come over. They weren't in uniform. They didn't have on the right shorts, no hat. And homeboy came to the field with chips in his hand, just munching. And I'm big on, like, if we're about to get paid the same amount of money, you need to put in some kind of effort that matches mine. And so I was like, I don't even, I went to Jacob after the fact, but I told him, I was like, you either going to eat or you're going to ref the game. One or the other has to happen, because I'm not about to sit here and play this babysitting game with you.
Yeah, I just feel like there's maybe some sort of disconnect between, I don't know what it is about being an official where people don't think that that's actually a job or something, and they just show up however they want to. I'm not really sure. Pat, what, you were going to say something?
Man, you hitting nerves right now. I'm saying, right now, I'm like, yo, we all get paid the same money. I think, I ain't going to lie. Todd, we can protest this one. We be like, hey, any referee you send us to our field that don't have the correct uniform on, we get 1/3 of their pay. I guarantee you they'll start sending us the right players or they don't want to ref.
I agree.
Hey, I'm going to go ahead and I'm always one to try to admit to my faults. I try to point out things that I've done wrong. So I just want to let y'all know the first national tournament that I ever worked, and Lance was he was the white hat for my field. He had me all day. I will admit, I was wearing a yellow bucket hat, and I had the Foot Locker stripes on because that was for some reason, I don't know. There's no excuse. Whatever. Lance put me on though. He talked to me about it. He said, this is what you got to wear. This is what you got to order from Amazon, this and that. So I definitely, my beginnings did not look very good. So I hear y'all, but maybe if it's an official that hustles, if they've read the rules, maybe give them a chance, even if their uniform isn't completely perfect. On the flip side of that, though, I get pissed off when I see somebody with their jersey untucked. That just drives me crazy. And I know that's a little thing, but it just drives me crazy. I'm like,
that's a fair statement.
You know, or sagging your pants. Like, you can't have a belt and tuck your shirt in. Like, that's where I feel like those kind of situations, that's where a veteran player is going to look at that and say, this dude don't care. Yeah. So I'm gonna do it. All my sly veteran moves that I would normally get flagged on, I'm gonna do it over on his side. Mm-hmm. And they're probably right, honestly. You know, so I mean, when I was wearing a yellow bucket hat, I'm sure I was missing a lot of stuff because I was inexperienced. So I had to learn. So let's get right into it. Do's and don'ts of being an official. Hopefully, this goes all over the place. And officials all over the country watch this, and they don't want to be called out. Pat, you know what I like to do every single day is I just send pictures of referees that I found on the internet looking goofy. And I like to say, I take screenshots. I got a folder in my phone. Like, don't be caught by me because I'm watching that. I don't watch clips to see what a player is doing. I watch those clips to see what the official is, if they're suited and booted, you know? So, so cool. All right. So first and foremost, let's talk about the dues. We talked about a few different things just prior to the show. So I want, Tasha, I want to give you the floor as far as just being a team player and how like the crew mechanics should look in a positive way for an official.
How we should look, we just talked about uniforms. So I feel like that is, can be left unsaid, but just communication on the field. Like, not everybody on the field is going to have the clock. Not everybody on the field is going to have the official scorecard, even though technically everybody should have it. So like if it's a 3-man crew and we have a back judge that's keeping the time, I shouldn't have to constantly ask you what the time is. Or players shouldn't constantly ask me to then ask you what the time is. So like just being on the same page, but also accepting different people's viewpoints on whatever play occurred. If you throw a flag, there can be many different angles. You might not have the best angle if you're the line judge because you're watching the quarterback. But I think it's very typical for the line judge and the field judge to come together to speak about things. So being able to just respectfully communicate and also realize that there's different angles to the game.
Yeah, for sure. So I heard you mention game clock. So as far as that goes, when you run a game clock, you have a set set minutes that you yell out, that you announce, or is it just kind of how the game is flowing? How do you do that?
I try to do it like every 5 minutes, and then under five, just like every minute. Just because, honestly, even as an official, if there's a lot of stuff going on, it's easy for me to forget to even call up a time. Or I look down and I'm like, oh, I never announced that there was 1 minute, an hour, and 30 seconds. So, yeah. Like, stuff like that also helps me at the end of the day as well. So I try to, like, if it's 12 and a half, I'll do, like, 10 minutes, and then I'll go to five, and then I'll go 1 minute down every after that.
So as far as preference goes for you, if you're looking at a two-man crew, are you holding all the clocks, QB clock, play clock, and game clock?
I would prefer that. It's easy for me to have the game clock and the play clock at the same time because you have my preference as well.
Yeah, and then you add a third official, and then you're passing that game clock on to the back judge.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then with a fourth official, do you prefer to stay on the line of scrimmage, or do you like to move behind the quarterback?
That's a really tough question to answer, only because when you have people that are elite rushers, if they are rushing from a specific side and you're only on the other side of the quarterback, it's hard for you to see that the flag has been pulled. So for that specifically, I'll prefer to stay on the line. However, if I am going to be behind the quarterback, I am communicating with my line judge, like try to hold for a little bit for me, because if we have two in the back, they should be good to be able to call that sack if one occurs on their side where they can see it and I can't.
Gotcha. Okay, Pat, how about you as far as crew mechanics, that team aspect? What are you looking for in a positive way with officials?
I would say one she hit on as far as communication, but one of mine is silent communication. As far as with veteran referees or guys that has been around, like especially guys I've been refereeing with or officiating with, you know hand signals. I know hand signals. Some other guys know hand signals. So if I had, say, as far as a three-man crew, you know, I like to go behind the quarterback regardless as to why, because I want to be able to protect the quarterback at all times, no matter what. Then I have my line judge, and then I have my deep wing or my deep back judge. So that's – but once we get to the goal line within, I would say, the five-yard line, I will move to the line of scrimmage. Then I'll also move as far as my line guy. I will put him on fourth on the goal line, and then I'll put my back guy on the back line. So we got all areas covered. So – I don't have to move. I'll be able to watch for illegal forward passes, you know, and that's what other people need to adopt going forward. Not trying to take off too quick to get on the goal line because you have an athletic quarterback that might take advantage of crossing the line of scrimmage, especially, you know, in co-ed. You know, they like to get in that area and flip the ball to the females or whatever. But sometimes they actually take a yard past the line of scrimmage. You might miss it because you're trying to move too far ahead to get to the goal line. So that's a mechanic that I know I've tried to work on. And also that back judge need to keep his head out the his or her eyes out the backfield. You should be looking with your belt buckle should be facing the as far as the ball. That's it. You should be an angle at the ball. In your area, you should be watching everything within that 45-degree angle to once you have to turn. Yeah, you should be able to be backing up as that person approaches. You shouldn't have to. You should be back by at least 22 yards, even in a small ball field. 22 yards is the minimum you should be. So when I see a back judge up on like 15 yards, that's incorrect because what if they want to throw a fly route? Now you're out of position and now you're getting beat down the field.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, honestly, I had a situation a couple weekends ago in a tournament, and I had an official that did, you know, it was a two-man crew, and me and him worked really well together the whole time. Can't really say that he necessarily had a lot of misses or anything. I hadn't worked with him before, but we were communicating a lot when we both would throw flags at the same time. We came in and talked about it. I think that communication is huge. We did have something in the championship that I would say was something just that I brought up to him after the game and said, hey, this is just something to work on. Essentially, I wanted him to hold that first down, and that first down was really important in the game, the play of the game. Because he was trying to cheat and get farther downfield with the receivers, he ended up being past the first down marker. And because of my angle, there was double quarterbacks in the backfield, and I really wasn't able to see much. It was hard for either one of us to really have an angle on whether or not the guy had a first down. So ultimately, he just had to go with his gut. He made a call, and I went with it. But it was, I feel like, a good teaching moment after the fact to be able to say, hey, just moving forward, if you're the back judge, you want to hold that line as long as you can, especially if you start to see a run develop. Try to get back to that line if you've kind of given it up. So that was something, Pat. I think that's a really good point as far as the red zone. I think adapting and adjusting, to make sure that we see as much as possible, especially when there's only two of us. There's so much going on in the red zone. Tosh, you mentioned just, looking at what the rusher brings, and adapting to that. I think that's a huge do for officials, is to be willing to adapt and adjust and talk with your crew and see what's working best. Sometimes it is good to push pull, like a lot of guys like to do. Other times, you got to hold that line, and you just got to hope that, your downfield guy with his slides on is going to be able to make the right call. So, so we talked about looking professional. The next thing I would just want to bring up is being present. So, Pat, why don't you start us off with that? What does that look like as an official, being present in the game?
This is a good one, too. So, and I go through this I'm not going to say every week, but I'm lying. If I'm out there, I always have an official not being present. It's like, what are you thinking about? Like, are you thinking about those Doritos, because you're hungry by a certain time, or as far as like, what you mean by present as far as being on time, or you talk about present as in the game?
In the game, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I just want to make sure I'm on the right topic, because I have some referees that don't have to answer right before the game. That's another pet peeve,
Hey, that's
but as far as being present during the game, as far as talking to the sideline, you're not present in the game, because you're trying to explain something to the sideline when that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to distract you to take your eyes off of something that they already know what the call is and the coach know what it is, but that's what they do. It's a pet. It's just something that they, but also you're wondering about, okay, what's the next game? Who we got next? You're not even present on what we have going in front of us right now. One issue that I would say I deal with, as far as especially in women, as far as in eight women's, we have a male ref, Tosh, you probably, go with this one. The females are going to, they're going to flirt and do everything to try and get their attention to take their head away from the game, and they're not present. They're thinking about other things, And like, dude, you do know she don't like you. Like, she's just playing with your emotions. Like, you're not even present. You know what I'm saying? Like, but that's just something that that's a good skill. Because I'm quite sure the men would try and do it to the women if they could. But we don't have as many women referees or officials. So,
Pat, I gotta just mention this. I gotta bring up this saying. So back in the day when you were playing, did you ever feel like you? did you ever feel like you went up to an official that maybe wasn't experienced, and you were on the sideline in his ear trying to distract him a bit, or you never did anything like that?
Oh, most definitely. That's how I know. That's what I'm telling you. Like, yeah. I noticed everything that I used to do. Like, even in Vegas, for an example, I forgot that team was playing against us. That was from, when I say, they're from California. And the female on co-ed, she just kept standing next to my official, and everywhere he went, she was next to him. And I'm like, I literally had to call a official timeout. And I said, hey, excuse me, ma'am, can you please back up 5 yards away from my official? Like, he can't even turn sideways without him running into your ass. Like, get out the way. Stop talking to him because he's entertaining you. You know what I'm saying? But, I mean, it happened. That was the first time I've ever seen that. On top of this female, it's like they had two of them. They had one on the one side of the 50 and the other one on the other side of the 50. Like, nobody.
Hey, man. Hey man, what? I mean, maybe they were just trying to spit game, man. Just it was in Vegas, like.
Oh man, like they did that every time that team got on the field. Every time, like, bro, like. And at first, I was like, "Nah, that's just tendency. They really just, you know, they just." But then when I see the team get into like the red zone, that's when they really got close up on. I'm like, okay, they're now trying to distract them to, you know, for them to probably miss a call or something like that. Because they only did it like when it was on like defense.
Yeah. So Tasha, I know you're still playing. You're still slinging that rock, QB. Do you know plenty of officials? Just be honest. When you get the opportunity, are you trying to distract an official so maybe he forgets to count his play clock or you know something like that? You do anything like that?
I hate to disappoint you, but honest to God, I am not that kind of player.
Okay.
Like, I will be like, even if it's for the other team, like, I'm very, because I mean, playing locally, honestly, doesn't mean much because I'm just out there doing, like, playing for fun. And if I'm being honest, the majority of officials in this area of Florida that I won't specify are just there to be there, drinking and smoking, just slides. Untucked jerseys, whatever, you name it, they do it. But like, if as an official who plays, there's nothing worse than playing on a field with officials who don't know what they're doing. So if they miss a call, even if it's not for my team, I will gladly be like, do you not just see that occur? Why aren't you like this? So I actually am like really, really fair because I would want that to be my situation if I was officiating. I would want to be fair both ways. I hate to not give you any exciting news, but
No, you didn't disappoint at all. I mean, you know, you gave me enough news of the fact that really what you're saying is you don't have to distract the officials in your area because they're in a different world already.
But I will say that in retrospect to what Pat just said about females trying to distract the male players. It definitely full force happens on the opposite end. If I'm doing basketball, if I'm doing flag football, guys just won't stop talking. And that they'll be in my ear. And I'm like, you know, I'm not entertained. Because I won't entertain that, especially if you're not the captain or the quarterback of the team. Because I feel like for the majority of the part, those are the people that speak the most in the field. If you're not one of those two people, don't address me. Because I have a game to ref, to officiate. And so, like, guys will do that consistently, and I won't even be saying anything. And I know that you said that the guys were entertaining those ladies in Vegas, but like, even if I don't entertain the men, they still try to spit game, flirt, distract, whatever you want to do, they do it.
Yeah, no, for sure. I feel like the best way to kind of deter any of that, you know, side talk that's happening, what I try to do is, as they're yapping in my ear, whatever, I will, in the middle of their sentence, I will yell out the play clock. I will yell out the game clock. I'll yell out just to completely, like, abruptly interrupt them so they understand that, like, I'm paying attention to the game right here. Like, you can say whatever you want, but I'm right here, you know? So I try to do that with that. But, I think it's interesting to see that dynamic as far as, especially, there are plenty of officials that still play. And I think that is a huge challenge to be able to turn it back and forth, especially if you're playing and officiating in the same tournament. I think it's very challenging. I definitely stopped playing and then became a full-time official, so I can't necessarily speak on it. Pat, do you feel like it's hard to switch back and forth in that sense, or what do you think?
As for switching back and forth as a player and a ref.
In the same tournament.
I can say yes. And you know from experience, you knew from Richmond, I was so pissed off at an official that I had to leave. I didn't even want to work the rest of the day because I was like, what the hell? Like, I mean, I've never seen a charging call on a dip and a guy goes underneath and they can't pull his flag and he's still dipping and moving. And the official throws the flag from the right side of the field, saying the receiver, which is like 5'4", 5'5", is charging. And I was like, dude, do you know what a charge is? And, you know, I was like, you know what? I'm not saying anything. I'm not an official right now. But I was livid. I'm talking about like that movie with the emotions or whatever. I was that red dude. Like, I literally was hot. Like, my dude was cooking inside. Like, bro, like, oh, if I didn't have consequences and repercussions after this, boy, oh, my God. Yo, I would have. And, you know, I was in director mode at the same time. At the Richmond tournament, so I really couldn't say nothing. I was just like, I'm going to tattle. I'm going to snitch.
I'll speak on in Tampa. Tosh, I know that you went back and forth a little bit from playing, and I think you actually even were you officiating in the same division that you were playing, or was that in Miami?
That was in Miami.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So in Miami, you did that. Yeah. So I will say this, that I've noticed you're pretty good about being able to be patient with the officials when you're playing, even though you might, you know, want to point something out. I think that goes a long way as a player that has official experience, because I can tell you probably every time I'm in a tournament, I will have a player say to me at some point when they're arguing a rule that they don't know that they're an official. And they will say to me, I'm a ref. I'm a ref back home. I know these rules. And then I'm like, especially in East Coast Nationals where a challenge was $50, I'm like, dude, save your $50. Because I'm telling you right now, the rule is this, and what you're saying is wrong. Now, maybe back home where you officiate, maybe the rule's different, but please save your $50. Like, don't go down that road, you know? So I've seen that also where someone just throws out there, oh, I know the rules, I'm an official, blah, blah, blah. Well, be careful making that statement, you know? So, cool. The next thing about dues is just as far as officials getting involved in the game. Now, I know that this looks very different compared to non-contact and contact. This was something that Lance brought up to us. I know he's not, you know, not on the show tonight, but he was more kind of referencing letting the players play. So, Pat, I want to bring you in first and just to speak on contact and what that looks like. And, you know, does that create a gray area where players need to play? Or does that, like, how do you prevent it from getting out of control? But then on the flip side of it, how, as an official, do you prevent yourself from getting too involved in the game?
Okay. And, like, man, it felt like we talked. Like, I should have been on here for Richmond. it can actually start, actually, in youth as far as with the coaches. And what I mean by that, you know, you want to let the 9-year-old and 10-year-old play. But we know they're not as skilled when it comes to being set on the line and all that. If we had to wait on that, you know, it would never be a play because somebody's always moving. Kids are 9 years old. They're hyper. They're going to be offside. They're going to be, you know, illegal. There's going to be things going on. So you can tell a coach, for an example, hey, I'm letting y'all, you know, play. But when we get to the playoffs or, you know, elimination round, I'm tightening up everything. So this is the time where you guys need to work on your mechanics as far as being still, you know, motioning. Snapping the ball before the play clock expires. Now, you know, that's one example of the youth, you know what I'm saying, as far as not letting the game get out of hand or, you know, as far as tightening the game up. But now when it comes to contact, as far as in the men or women, you know, as far as when I tell them, hey, this is me letting you play. This is my definition of letting you play. Hey, if I see you attempting to go for a flag and you don't put your shoulder into that individual, like Bill Goldberg, and you drive that person to the floor or nothing like that, and you it's just a physical enforced flag pull, or you're blocking and you're blocking with your open hands. But now if I see you shoulder blocking, okay, I'm going to throw the flag. You know, that's trying to keep it out of hands. Or if I see a person trying to lead block and they drop their shoulders to block instead of running with their hands open, because it's called open hand blocking, not shoulder blocks. you know, I try and explain that to him doing pool play, you know, some of the things that I catch him with. But now when it gets to the elimination round, that's how I eliminate any, well, they didn't call this on that field, and or they didn't call this before, you didn't call this earlier, because if you was on my field anytime during that day, you knew I already told you what was going to happen before we got to the elimination round. You know, yeah. This is what happened. So I've already prepped you, and I've already told you, you know, these are the things that officials are going to call on not just my field, but the fields as well. So you go over there shoulder blocking now, you crack back with your shoulder, illegal blocking, it's going to get called. So don't go over there saying it wasn't called over there in this field. So that's a lie, you know. But as far as with the women, that's tough. Women, I don't know what, they just don't like the block in the chest area, because I guess, you know what I'm saying, different area compared to men. But they just have a strange thing about choking. I don't know. It's just women love to choke. They just like to love to grab the throat. I don't understand. And they grab the hair. And then if they get beat, you know what I'm saying, they grab the hair. And I'm like, bro, like, you know. So, yeah, I will hit you with a flag if I see somebody's head jerk back. This is not tackle football. The hair is not a part of the game. You know, yeah. So, but these are all the things that I've learned prior to now. So I give them briefings at the beginning of the game to every team, no matter when they step on my field, no matter the first game. And then if that same team is playing, the next team that comes on to play them, I explain the same rules. So the other team knows, oh, he ain't bullshitting. He knows, he's telling them the same thing. So game never got a hand. Now I see a player start walking up to another player, and I'm telling everybody to back up, and that player persistently walks and keep walking. Oh, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and give you some time on the sideline. I put it into it right away.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I definitely I feel like this is something we talked about a few months ago. As a player, be careful what you ask for, because if you bring attention to something you feel like is happening to you, just realize now you have the official's attention on you as well. And so if you are, you know, if you're on the O-line and, you know, you feel like the D lineman is, you know, doing stuff, whatever, you know, hooking you, anything like that, whatever it is, and you point it out and you say, hey, can you watch for this? Well, now realize that the holds that maybe you were getting away with at the same place are now going to get called as well. I think as far as contact goes, that's something that I kind of feel things out, especially in the pool play games, to see, okay, in the trenches, is there going to be a lot of whining? Because if that's what we're going to do, then we're going to nitpick, and we're going to keep it really clean, and that's not really what contact should be. Like, have some fun out there. You know, I feel like the best example of a contact game going really well is when the O-line and D-linemen are just continuing to battle the entire game. And when one guy gets knocked down, the other one picks him up, they go back and forth, hey, good block, you know, you got around me, this or that. I think there's contact is still a small enough community that I feel like there should be that good sportsmanship there. And if it can stay like that, instead of immediately on the first play of the game, oh man, oh official, he's holding me, you know, it's like, okay, here we go. We're gonna reel it in real quick, you know. Pat, do you kind of do similar stuff like that, or how does that go?
So one thing that I do tell them, if I walk out to the field, of course it's warming up, so you're gonna have a lot less clothing. You're gonna see a lot more tight uniform. But in the wintertime or in the fall when it's cool and you're wearing all that material, bro, don't even come to me talking about some holding. You already know. No, because you're wearing all that extra material to give a guy that been in the trenches on both sides of the ball, on offense or defense. You know what I'm saying? And if you are lineman and you're trying to block and you gave me all the extra material, I'm going to snatch the hell out of that interior and I'm going to pull you out of the way. That's what we're going to do. Vice versa as a blocker. Even though I'm not supposed to have open hand blocking, referees don't have x-ray vision. We can't see through bodies. We can't. Yeah. So you just have to let them know, hey, I can't see through the bodies. Use your hand. Active hands. Get off the block. If I see you knock his hand down and then I see your jersey get tugged and you get tugged to the ground because he's holding you, now I can see it. But if you're running and you just dangling like a puppet, no, dude, I can't see through him. I can't.
Yeah. No, for sure. So, Tasha, I don't know if you heard this statement as far as when you're officiating non-contact games. I get this sometimes, you know, where a player will say, hey, just let us play, let us play. In my mind, kind of my initial response to that, I don't always speak it out, is in my head, I say, you should just go over to the contact field. If that's what you want to do, if you want to play, then go over to contact. And a lot of those guys that maybe you'll be more physical in non-contact, they never play contact. So what is your involvement in the game as far as that goes, as far as letting players play? What do you do with that?
It's hard to let things go. Only because, like Mr. Pat here, people get petty on the field. No issues. They get petty. Egos get involved. And if you hit me, I mean, not me, silly, but if you, like, hypothetically push me, I might try to get even and push you back, whether it's called or not. So, like, I feel like for me, I try my best to just, like, not necessarily allow the players to play as if we weren't there. And I just don't want it to escalate, but that's just me. Like, I would never want to be put in a position to where, like, a fight occurs. And not that I would have to be the one to break it up, but it's just like, now you're wasting my time. Now I have to deal with a whole another issue. Well, we can just be playing football. And so I feel like at the end of the day, I feel like players would respect more if you called a tight game both ways, rather than things get real close to getting out of hand. But like, but you called that down here, but you didn't call it down here. And it's like, in our eyes, it's two totally different things of contact. There was, you know, incidental, and there was legitimate contact. But to them, it's like the same exact thing. And so what Pat was saying about, like, you know, you don't want anybody to come to your field and not know what's about to happen, or say on the other field, they called it this way. But at the end of the day, we can't communicate with everybody, with every other field, because we're all different individuals with different perspectives on how the game of flag football should be played. So the best I can do is communicate with my team and let others know when I join their crew on a different field, how I call the game. And it's kind of like one of those things where the first person to make the first call, you're like, all right, we're doing that. So we're going to rock with that. Like, just to keep it as consistent as possible down the line.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I feel like something that I've ran into, it was a pro championship game in Vegas. It might have been aired out or five. And it was a four-man crew. I was on the line of scrimmage. And I'm not sure what happened previous to that game. I came over from the women's division. And so in the women's division, I was calling, you know, games really tight. That was women's pro. I feel like if you're in the pro division, I'm going to hold you a little bit more accountable. You're going to hear my play clock. Be very strict to that 25 seconds. There's going to be, you know, if I see a movement on the line and I'm right there on the line and I've got, you know, more than, you know, two officials, I'm going to call it. Now, I'm not going to call every little twitch, because I think that is excessive. But so then I went over to this pro championship game, and I got, I think probably within the, you know, first 5 minutes of the game, on both sides of the ball, I called false starts. And these players were furious, and it was like very clearly it was a false start. For example, the center lined up with his foot in front of the ball, and I'm very you know, back up, center, back your foot up, back up, hike, okay, false start, like you had your chance. And they're just like, immediately they're turning to Lance like, come on, Lance, what are you doing with this guy? You know? And so, you know, it's those kind of situations where, I don't know, I just feel like in general, there are a lot of pro veteran players that have gotten so used to taking advantage of inexperienced officials, then when things get tightened up a little bit on them, they immediately think like, oh, okay, bring a director over. I don't like what this official's calling. But hey, I mean, just like there's officials that want to make it to the Olympics, shouldn't these players be getting ready for the Olympics as well? And I know in IFAF, when you have a four-man crew and they're really locked in, they're making those calls, you know. So I just feel like things are a lot more tightened up, and especially when you have an official that's not from the U.S., they are going to call every little version of contact, you know. So I think that that's – so I don't know. I feel like non-contact and contact kind of live in different worlds in that. But, Pat, I appreciate your perspective on just how that – how you kind of set the tone and kind of work into that. You know, I think yeah, go ahead.
I can tell you one more thing, and I know it might be petty, Tasha. I know you might enjoy this one, but but you got to remember, I deal with 8 women all the time. This is contact. I literally threw a flag on a young lady, unsportsmanlike, but I gave her a warning for flirting, unsportsmanlike. Mm-hmm. No flirting with the referee. Nope. You don't turn around and flirt with me. No, that's unsportsmanlike. I waved it off. You know what the game was? They said, oh, shit, he's not playing. No more issues.
Hey, I mean, sometimes you got to make an example out of somebody. I have no issue with that. I have no issue with making an example out of somebody.
I know you know what that's what's my guess. You know that rule inside and out. Hey, yeah. Hey, you made a mistake and made me read that rule. I was like, oh, flirting. Oh, okay. You're distracting. Oh, okay. Boop. Hey,
yeah,
they was like, oh shit, like, nah. I mean, of course, after the game, I was cool, you know, but at the end of the day,
hey,
we got to keep the game focused. Let's go.
I feel like, as far as an unsportsmanlike goes, the best time to call a warning is almost as soon as the game starts. If you can get your flag out and say, hey, unsportsmanlike warning on the sideline. Mm-hmm. It might clear up that whole situation. And, you know, I know the last few weeks I've referenced Miami. I feel like that was there was a tournament where some, you know, pretty intense stuff happened, fights, and a gun was brought out and things like that. I feel like those are the situations that if you can calm down the situation in pool play or the first start of the game, way before the championship. Because if you get into a championship and that's when you're throwing an unsportsmanlike and it's costing the team 15 yards, which is probably going to let the other team score a touchdown, you've waited too long. And already adrenaline's high. Everybody wants to win the championship. They all, you know, have their trophy room at home or they want to display all these medals and rings that they get. And so they're looking at it like, wait a minute, like this ref just cost me the game. Now, ultimately, one play, just like one drop ball or one missed flag or any of that does not dictate the game. But in a championship situation, if you have not set that tone early in the pool play game in the first couple of rounds, you're kind of putting yourself at a disadvantage to then be like, oh, am I sure I want to call this unfortunate like now? Because now this is having an effect on the game. So I think that's definitely a huge talking point and something that, as crews, it's important to be on the same page. And but, Tasha, I agree with you also of just, like, it's hard not to call something you see. And whether it happens in the last 30 seconds of a game, of a championship game, or whether it happens in, you know, pool play in the first couple minutes. So, both good points. Let's move on to don'ts. I think the biggest thing that probably all of us mentioned is something is egos and being prideful. So, Tasha, just go ahead and speak on officials having egos or being prideful. Let me hear it.
Oh, my gosh. I had an experience one time. I'm not going to say where it was at, but it was at a pretty big tournament. And I was in the line of scrimmage. We were in a 3-man crew, I believe. There was a deep ball thrown opposite side of the field, but it was thrown towards the inside of the field. It wasn't a post, but it was on the inside. So I had a clear view of what happened. The other official was on the backside of the receiver. To me, the ball hit the ground, but it was very close. So if somebody were to have been like, they caught the ball, I would have been like, probably from your angle, but like literally it hit the ground from where I was looking at. And so I talk to the official after the fact. I'm not gonna lie, I don't, because it was my first time doing this format, I wasn't confident, but I'm like, I'm reaching far. And not that I didn't have the capability to do so, I just didn't feel comfortable doing it in that setting. And I was like, oh, you know, that ball was actually hit the ground. And they're like, no, it didn't. And then somebody came over and they're like, yeah, that ball definitely hit the ground. And then I said something and I was like, would you like, what if I had stopped the game and what I told you? And they were literally like, I wouldn't have caught it anyway. I would have just went with what I said, with what I had to catch. And I'm like, oh, okay. So like, that to me is like having an ego. Like nobody's perfect. You can afford to be wrong and somebody else can afford to be right. Because that's how you grow together as a team when you're officiating. There's three teams. There's the home, there's away, and there's the officials. So like having an ego can get, can like play a huge part in like the ref crew functioning as a unit, as opposed to three individuals, can be troublesome in a lot of areas as far as like the team, the players complaining and stuff like that. And I'm not going to say that I'm perfect either, because when I do play, and I know officials are just out there to get paid and they don't know what they're doing and they're drunk, I will tell them, I will not even politely, I will have to tell them about themselves. And it's not because I have the ego, but I have respect enough for myself to know that I wouldn't be doing what you're doing now, officiating my game. So I feel like it's very important to know where you came from in every aspect of everything in life. And an official, you were never good in the beginning. Like, nobody just starts officiating and like, oh yeah, I know how to blow a whistle perfectly. I know how to throw my flag. I know how to position myself. I have the 1-inch full locker stripes with the yoga pants or Dickie shorts, which I saw like 3 weeks ago. So it's like just being able to know where you come from and like where you came from, and being able to like teach somebody in a certain situation, as opposed to talking down to them because you have a high, you have a big.
Yeah, for sure. I will say that I have had situations where I know walking into it, maybe I've worked with this official before or something like that. And after the fourth or fifth flag of mine that they wave off, I kind of understand that they've decided that they're going to dictate how the game goes. Mm-hmm. And that makes it really hard for me to do my job. So I kind of just, at that point, I feel like, okay, it's their circus. And so I'm going to match what they're doing. And after the fact, just like Pat, just like you said, I'm going to be the first to snitch. I will go right up to Jacob and I will say, hey, just so you know, this is what I was dealing with. You know, is it possible for me to work on another field or something like that? Because if it's not even coming down to whether or not you're calling what you see, and I will say this, there have been officials, and I know they're not officials anymore, where they want to see the game go a certain way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I don't want any part of that. And so I would much rather be, okay, all right, it's your circus. I'm going to be in the back judge. I'm going to call what I see and what I'm confident in. I guess if you wave it off, you're going to wave it off. But then after the fact, I'm going to say, Jacob, this is what's going on. And you know, let him do the rest from there. So, Pat, what are your thoughts on ego?
So ego is a big part of the crew. And that's one thing I did take from Jacob and also took from G, as far as one of the officials on the DMV, ego-wise. Sometimes you have to swallow your pride and your ego and understand that you're not always going to be right. You don't know everything. You know what I'm saying? No matter how long you've been reffing or how short you've been reffing. So, but the biggest thing is having communication before the game and letting the officials know their responsibilities and their keys. So, you know, for example, I had a quarterback. It looked like, you know, it sounded like the quarterback was a roughing the passer, but you know where I stand when I'm behind the quarterback. I'm moving with the quarterback. The rusher went to grab the triple threat. The quarterback had her shirt rolled up. The defender smacked her hip, like as far as where the area was, but pulled the flag. The quarterback did a dramatic tuck and roll, flop, roll down the field. I didn't throw a flag. My line judge threw the flag, but the quarterback that threw the ball, that LeBron, threw an interception down the field in his area. Yeah. He didn't even see it, but he saw the tuck and roll where I'm at. The back judge, which thank God he was looking in that area, because I didn't even see the interception because I'm looking at my key. He said, he threw the flag. So I brought all my officials in. I said, hey, what is your flag? He said, I have roughing the passer. I said, and I explained to him, I said, ask him, what is your key? You know, I didn't check him too hard. I was like, hey, what is your key? From the line of scrimmage to where? To this area. I said, how can you see that quarterback way on the other side of the field where I'm at and you make that flag, but you can't tell me in your key area if that defender caught an interception or not? What if you'd have dropped it because the back judge caught an interception? What if you'd have dropped it because you wasn't looking and you was looking at my area? And he was like, yes, sir. And I told him, I learned this a long time ago when I first started officiating. Keep your eyes out the backfield. Your key is the line 45. That's it. Because if you look at where I'm at, everything in the middle does what? In the three-man crew. It's butt naked. There's nobody looking there. Yeah. It's wide open. Yeah. Anybody can get away with anything. But now, later on down that game, I saw a block in the back right in front of him. I threw my flag. He came to me. We came in. He said, hey, Pat, the defender wasn't even touched. The receiver pulled their hands in, and the DB dove for the flag, and it looked like it, but he never touched. You know what I did? Respect. I shouldn't be looking in your area. Even though I had a view from my angle, it looked like a blocking in the back, but you were standing right there. I waved it off. So it's all about, swallowing your pride, swallowing your ego, and don't have one. Even if I am the white hat or you're the white hat or whoever's the white hat, talk to your crew and go that way and move on. Because if you got beef on your crew, you're not going to have a good game, because now this official is not going to be what? Present.
Yeah.
He's out. His mind is gone. He don't care no more. He's ready to get this game over with and move out.
Yeah. I think the trust goes a long way. I think also, as far as for the future of flag football, we need every opportunity to be able to train up new officials. And the way that happens, the reality of it is trial and error. They got to make mistakes. So I just feel like in that situation, when I'm on the line, two-man crew, I'm on the line, and I have somebody that's starting at 7 yards and they're going downfield, my eyes are coming down last, but I just want to trust that official. And when they throw a flag and I say, okay, come talk to me real quick. What did you see? If they explain to me that they saw pass interference, I'm going to roll with it. Even if my eyes came down last and I kind of think I saw something different, I want to roll with that because they explained it to me right. They understood what the rule was. They understood what pass interference looked like. And I want to roll with that. And I want them to get confidence in the fact that, hey, I made a call that put this team on the 1 yard line, and my white hat stuck with it. And so, yeah, I mean, I think being able to come together as a crew, any of those opportunities where pride can just be thrown out the window, let's talk about it. Let's have that conversation. What did you see? What did you see? I didn't have the angle. Okay, let's roll with it. Especially when multiple flags come out. And, I mean, the reality of it is the best-case scenario for us is offsetting penalties and replay the down. Like, that makes things real simple. So when two different flags come out and that's what can happen from it, I think that's, like, that saves so much drama. Because, really, both teams get that, okay, cool. They both saw something different. So, all right, cool. Well, one other thing that I just want to bring up, Tosh, I know that this is important to you. It's something important to me. Is a big don't as far as officials goes is lack of rules, not knowing the rules. So speak on that. Let me hear it. Podium's yours.
All right, I'm gonna preface by saying there's so many formats. I understand that there are times where you may forget certain rules. However, some tournament organizations have done well by their officials by making those little spiral notebooks that you can keep in your pocket. I think it's big. Don't sign, and there's too many to be named. There's so many, like, officials. There's always going to be a shortage of officials everywhere across the board because nobody wants to deal with it. And if it was an easy job, everybody would do it. But it's hard when I go to tournaments and you know well in advance what's going to go on. Most of the time people have like an officials meeting beforehand on Zoom or whatever. But people show up not dressed properly, and they just don't know the rules, and they're expecting to be carried by the other officials that are working with them. It's a big pet peeve of mine, because you're not only making us as a whole look bad, you're pissing me off because you're making the same amount of money, and then also, like, you just don't care. Like, you don't have enough respect for the game to even try to read the rule book.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. So, Pat, I want to change gears, and I want to give you the opportunity to talk about the don't of involving instant replay at any point. How is that a big don't for you?
So, my big don't is, like, when you have a media person on the field, and it might be a person that might be recording for the other team, and they ask, hey, can I be on your behind you or whatever? And you be like, okay, cool, you can record. You know, you're in the part of the media. Well, my biggest pet peeve is never agree if that a media player say, hey, I seen something else. I always tell the media player, the media person, hey, I don't care what the call is. I don't care what goes on out here. Just keep recording. Don't come over, because if you come over, you're off my field.
Yeah.
Don't even go after the game and watch no media at all, because if you look at that film on the field after the game and you're like, dang, I messed up, or a player hear you say that, now they lose confidence in you. You know what I'm saying? And I let it surface on Facebook or IG before I agree to it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I had a player inbox me say, hey, Pat, the ball, I remember I told you the ball hit the ground before the quarterback, but from my view, my angle, it looked like it landed on her foot. But guess what? Yeah. She had video of it. I said, hey, pimps mess up. Pimps fall. Hey, I catch you next time. You know what I'm saying? Game is over. I mean, they lost 34-0, but she was right. The ball did hit the ground. But yeah. I still didn't care about no instant replay or no film, or if you had a picture of it. I didn't care, because guess what? It is nothing in the book, in the rule book of USA Flag, UFFL, CFFL, BBL, whatever kind of L. Nothing says instant replay. It is what it is.
Yeah, no, that's facts. And hey, in the world of Southern California, where everybody's got a camera and they all got media people, I had a situation where it was a co-ed game, and I was on the line of scrimmage, but was like the 4-yard line. I was trying to shift into the end of the front goal line best I could, because it was only a 2-man crew. But from my angle where I was at, it looked like to me, before the player extended the ball past the plane, that the flag got pulled. And so that was the call I made. We stuck with it. That was that. I had a player come to me, you know, a couple days later, because again, everybody records out there. They have YouTube games almost immediately. But this player sent me still shots, slow motion, still shots of this player. And that camera angle was on the other side, mm-hmm. and it was right on the goal line. Perfect. Absolutely. I can tell that ball definitely crossed the plane before the flag was pulled from that angle. Yep. Unfortunately, on the field, I was at a disadvantage because it was a 2-man crew, and I was at the angle that I was at. So I called what I saw, and that's what I said. So same kind of thing. I said, yeah, you're absolutely right. That ball did cross the plane. But during the game, that's what I saw, and I called it the way it was. So I think that's a really good point. I think that it all comes back to the accessibility of flag football. You know, we cannot compare flag football to the NFL. We just can't do it, because the NFL has a 7-man crew. They got 2 in the booth. They got big jumbotrons. They have all of these things. And the NFL official crew still miss stuff. So we are in a situation where we don't have instant replays. We don't have 9-man crews. We don't have any of that stuff. And so players got to be, you know, more accepting of the fact that no, we are not comparable to the NFL in that sense. So, just the final thing that I want to bring up, something that is a big don't for me is, as an official getting into a fight or an argument with a player, I think that everybody ultimately has a button that gets pressed. there's certain words that they don't want to hear. And I think this comes back to talking about the team unit, the team of officials. If you hear a player say anything in the direction of another official, I think it's very important that you protect that official by throwing an unforced flag early. Because if it gets to the point where then a player is in an official's face and they feel like they have to protect themselves, and whether they pull off their ref jersey or not, they have now felt like they've been backed into a corner and they have to protect themselves. And so that is definitely a big don't. You know, as an official, you got to just be able to ignore, put the ignore button. You got to stop listening. But I think there's a very big do in the sense that if you protect each other, if you hear somebody say something to another official, throw the flag and clean it up quick. Pat, you have any thoughts on that?
Yes, big time. And it happened here recently. And I mean, I want to publicly apologize to the young lady. I know she was in Vegas when it happened. I can't remember. I don't know her name. I know she plays with this purple team. But I did say something. I talked to her on the field about, you know, I prevented you from throwing an interception. Was I right at that time? Because she did throw an interception like two plays later. I was wrong because an official, I shouldn't speak to a player at all. Besides giving you the time, how many timeouts you have in your play clock. That is it. Or to tell you to back up. I was immature at that time, you know. But sometimes when I say they want the referees to have thick skin, it's good to have thick skin, but at the same time, us referees, like you said, we have to protect each other. And at the same time, too, even with the coaches on the sideline, players on the sideline, you have to start using your flag. Stop talking to the sideline, period. And I harp on that big time now. Even if a player jumps in my DM, I probably won't ever reply back ever again because, you know, I replied back, but I didn't say anything negative. But as an official, you don't entertain it. And that's one thing we don't do. We let the yellow entertain, and we let the commissioners take over from there. You know, we report it, and we go that route. So any official that may hear this, or if a male or a female call you out your name or whatever, don't turn around if they get under your skin, because some things can get under your skin. Whatever they say, just throw the flag of what's like. I mean, you know, if it's very vulgar, you know, you can eject them, coach or player on the field, you know what I'm saying, or on the sideline, fan too, you know, toss them out. Use your authority and go that route, because things can escalate. People these days love to run and grab weapons. And, you know, things happen that we could control, that we should have controlled at the beginning. And, you know, and you can de-escalate things a lot sooner by not saying – silence is the best voice ever, and using your yellow flag and letting the white hat explain what the sportsmanlike is for, because that official that throws that flag, it tells the white hat, and they go about their business. The players either ejected or, you know, they offer five plays. And we move on. Or the coach is ejected. Move on.
Yeah. Tosh, any thoughts on that subject?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's twofold. As officials, we know what we're getting ourselves into. And it is important. It's not the determining factor, but it's important for us to be able to let stuff ride and keep that thick skin. But at the end of the day, we should have boundaries and be able to not let people cross the line, especially with us. And like you said, Ann, I think it's important that if we ever hear an official on our crew or even ourselves get disrespected by anybody, it's our duty to throw that flag and let that speak for itself, because we can't, unfortunately, in our line of profession, we can't afford to stoop down to their level. Part of our job is to remain calm, cool, and collected. And if you don't like those two unsportsmanlike flags, you can get out. You can remove yourself from the field, the game, wherever. You don't have to play, you know.
Yeah. No, for sure. Well, I think we covered do's and don'ts. We talked all about just a lot of, I think, a lot of good information for officials. Hopefully this is an episode that gets passed on to new officials and they can take some of these talking points. And I appreciate this podcast in the sense that I feel like I continue to talk about stuff and I grow and learn, and I continue to want to be a better official. So this helps me hear in different perspectives. And so I thank y'all. Just to wrap up, we are all over. We're on social media. We're on YouTube. We're on Spotify, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. We are everywhere. So hopefully just join us anywhere you can and listen, like, subscribe, follow, so that we can continue to make this this episode happen and this podcast happen. So thank y'all so much, and have a good night.
Hey, I got one thing for you, Ian, please.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, what do you got? I just want to give a public thank you to Jacob for giving me the opportunity to start a USA flag as far as a official, which Travis and Chuck trusted Jacob as me as an official. And now due to the opportunity that they gave me, it allowed me to skip over high school as an official and become a college official. And, you know, and that's only with the help of all the officials and USA flag and UFFL or whoever you are out there. I appreciate everybody that I've worked with, and I'll still be doing this thing, but I just want to let everyone know, hey, your boy almost made it. Almost made it. Yeah. Almost stuck. That's
it. You, it's okay to speak in. This is Pat.
Yeah, I'm almost made it.
Yeah, that's facts. Yeah, so, hey, Jacob, we miss y'all this week. I know you're traveling to San Antonio. I hope everything goes smooth there. And yeah, hopefully you and Lance have some stories to tell next week. We will be on next week to talk about, to recap what happened in San Antonio. So I'm excited to see. Hey, big shout out to, you know, these are my guys from Colorado. As a former player, I played with a lot of them. The Bears are traveling down to Texas. But as we discovered in East Coast Nationals, YTG backed it up, and they brought a five contact team to East Coast Nationals. So they're bringing the same thing to San Antonio, and it's going to be interesting to see the Bears clash with YTG and contact. A lot of good non-contact teams are there. I also noticed that Top Shelf, a women's team from California, they're playing in a men's division. So there's a lot going on in San Antonio, and I just can't wait to I can't wait to have Jacob and Lance and you know, back to just recap it all. So with that being said, let's wrap it up, call it a night. See y'all.